Welcome back, my friends, to the On the Hard Days podcast, and I am thrilled that today is Friday, and Friday means Father Fridays. This is something brand new that I've started where I am talking with a dad of a neurodivergent kid so that he can share his story and sort of his perspective on what it's like in this fatherhood journey. Oh my gosh. So far, I've talked to a few dads and these episodes are fantastic. And it's really just fascinating to hear where their brains are at. And so my first comment to you is, while you're listening to this, think about if you know any dads of neurodivergent kids who you think might be interested in sharing their story. And they may say no at first because it is a podcast for mothers. I would highly recommend that you share this episode with a dad. And if they're feeling comfortable and brave, send me a DM or an email so I can get them on the podcast. So right now, Father Fridays is just a series. We've got it for a few weeks because I had a couple of dads wanting to connect with me. But it's not a regular thing unless we have enough dads who want to do it. So feel free to send the podcast their way. And by the way, as you guys may know, I am very hard at work on reaching a 100,000 download goal by the end of January 2023. So the best way to help me reach that 100,000 download goal is to, number one, make sure you've subscribed to the podcast so that your device will automatically download new episodes. Number two, share the show with others. I mean, of course, family and friends, but think therapists, pediatricians, teachers, anybody who you think might benefit from hearing what it is like from moms and now dads' perspectives in raising neurodivergent kids. And number three, leave a rating or review for the show if you would be so kind. With Apple, for example, the Apple algorithm will push the show out to more moms who need that support and validation. I thank you so, so very much for your continued support. And now, on to the episode. It takes a village to raise a child. We all know that, right? What happens if you can't find your village because raising your child is really, really tough? What if you are so filled with shame and doubt and guilt and fear of judgment that you don't share your triumphs and your struggles? You don't talk about it because you don't think anyone can possibly relate. Well, I've been there, and it was really hard for me to find my tribe, so I decided to make mine. I went out and found these amazing mothers who are also in the trenches, struggling to raise their kids. Together, we are a community. And in this podcast, On the Hard Days, you'll find motivating stories from other real moms who get it. We're going to accept who we are and how we show up for our children each and every day, even on the hard days. So I have Sean Martin on the podcast with me today. I'm very excited to have you on. So first of all, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm thrilled to get into this and have you as the sixth dad on the show because moms and dads are commenting on how relatable it is to hear from other dads who are raising neurodivergent kids. So why don't we start with just give us an overview of yourself and your family.
Yeah. So I guess I'll start with I'm 47 years young and grew up in the child 80s type environment. And I think that'll become relevant later as we go into my own parenting background. But my wife and I are the proud parents of identical twin boys. They are 12 years old. One was diagnosed with ADHD and anxiety. Unspecified tic disorder, so that's still in progress, in June of 2022. So I would say in the grand scheme of things, I am new into experiencing the life of a neurodivergent father or a father of a neurodivergent child. We're in the Pacific Northwest in a rural environment, and my wife and I have been working together both professionally and personally. Well, I guess working together since 2020. Prior to that, I was in corporate America traveling all the time. And we've been together since 1999. So it's been a while. And that's just kind of us in a nutshell so far.
I love it. I have always wanted to go to the Pacific Northwest, and it looks beautiful out there. And I'm on the East Coast. It's a wild ride of being with someone. And actually, that plays relevant into the conversation too. I've been dating my husband. Obviously, we're married now, but since 2000. And when that kind of time goes by, you both change as adults, just as people in general. But then when you have kids, that's the next level. Then when you have neurodivergent kids, that's just this whole other piece to it. So I would love to know, has there been any sort of, what are the shifts that have been happening over the years with you guys, and as you come to understand your kids and yourselves in your parenting journey?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, we could definitely spend the next hour just talking about that, as I'm sure you can appreciate. But I think that I'll start with it. There was this idea of what being a parent was going to be like when we first had the children, there in front of us. We're like, oh wow, here it goes. There's no handbook, but we're just going to give this our all. And it became an exercise in this idea of co-parenting and these milestones that you're supposed to experience. And then the reality sets in, especially as they start to get into the 2, 3, 4 year old phase and the personalities start to bloom. And I say this because now when I look back at all these different milestones as a parent, there were times where my wife and I were so on point together. And then there were times we were so complete opposite spectrums of how we would approach the whole parenting environment. You add into that the day-to-day experiences that build up, whether it's people saying, "Well, why is your kid melting down right now?" or whether it's me saying, "Well, let's just let him work it out. Let him just, get along with the other kids or not. Let him just work on this." And so there's this progression over time of all these experiences that lead up to we really didn't have a handbook for parenting. And as we look back, there were all these different milestones that we didn't see, but were very apparent as we're looking back at all of the development of our children. And we're trying to use that now to be on the same page and support each other, even in the times when we just want to kind of go and melt down on our own, and also try and remember that as we look forward to future milestones that are going to come, whether it's the external milestones like other family members or other people in the community making comments or those looks that you get, or whether it's finding the support system that we need as our children continue to grow and thrive, and just being on the same page. I can tell you that I was really focused on this idea of what it, being a father of a child is, let alone neurodivergent children. 3 years ago, I wouldn't have even had that word in my vocabulary. It was more like the kids will work itself out. And that created a lot of conflict in the early part of trying to find what was happening. And the big catalyst was COVID during lockdown and virtual school. That's when things really became apparent that something isn't working and there's something going on that we can't put our finger on. And that's when the whole formal process of trying to find therapists and doctors and all of the things started to kind of germinate. And so that's just kind of the short answer.
Well, it was a great one, and it led me to thinking about, the kids will work themselves out. This will work itself out. That's a pretty common thing to think, especially at first. And so COVID happened to be like the factor for you guys, but let's just take that piece away. How are parents supposed to come around? And a lot of times I have to say, I'm interrupting myself, but moms often tell me that their partners or husbands are struggling with the idea of shifting to it's not going to work itself out. And it's something about how they feel about themselves as, I don't know, men, dads, just people in general. What would you say? Like, you've obviously made that mental switch. And I guess, what would you say to dads who haven't yet done that? How do you know where that line is?
I say I'm making that switch. Maybe just play on your words. I wouldn't say I would high five that I've made it because there's always moments. And I think as a cisgender straight guy and growing up in an environment where that was the narrative, you grow up, you get a job, make your money, take care of your family. Like that was the ex I'm paraphrasing, but like that was beat into my head. Go to college, get a great job, take care of your family. There wasn't conversations around the mental health and well-being of myself. As a matter of fact, in many ways, it was kind of like be stoic, be firm, be the rock. And the rock to me was interpreted as almost like emotionless and just stay the course. And so in the beginning, for me, I think the struggle was unpacking that narrative where I was trying to, in my mind, figure it out. So I need to figure it out, just like I needed to figure out the job and the career and all the things, even though my wife has had a very successful career on her own as well for years. I had to go through this mental shift even before COVID that, yeah, I think the narrative that I was built with isn't fitting the environment that I'm currently in. And it took a long time for me to accept that. And I mean, I worked all the time. I'm in meetings all the time. I am traveling all the time. And so I come home and there's this like certain amount of energy left that I can give. And Mary, my wife, is in the thick of it. She works from home. She's in the home environment. She's dealing with the day-to-day stuff, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I come in and suddenly I have a few hours a night or the weekends, and then I'm back off again. And so there was this cumulative effect of frustration that she felt that I felt disconnected or we're not on the same page. And so I would say, and I'm making the transition because even today, I catch myself in that self-judgment mode where I'm like, oh my God, like he's having a total meltdown in public right now. He's 12 years old, and I don't understand why I have to deal with this. And I feel guilt and shame and frustration and anger. And those words I wouldn't even use 3 years ago because I've been reading Brené Brown and trying to, start Atlas of the Heart. And so trying to find more emotional words because I am not an emotional person by nature. And so it's just all those things that have had to happen for me. So I guess my advice to fathers listening to this, to husbands, to wives who are talking with their husbands, there's two parts of it. There's the self realization that I had to go through, but a lot of that happened because my wife called me out or called me in, however we want to use the phrase, saying, you got to read this, you got to do the work, you can't, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, whoever was the actual author of that quote. So I think that's where it started, is being really open to my wife calling me out on my lack of engagement. And then for me, I had to do some real eye-opening piece to take care of myself so that I didn't reflect my own frustration, anger, and shame in this idea that why is my son not like the other kids? And now today, I mean, there's therapy, there's groups, there's reaching out and finding other parents who are going through this in various parts of their journey from so there's a lot of things, but honestly it still happens and still is moments where my wife has to make sure she talks to me a little bit or makes sure that she's pointing out, hey, there's a new podcast that just came out, take a listen to this. And slowly I'm building that into my routine, and I think that that's been a real eye-opener for me, that I feel like I'm waking up a little bit. But at the same time, I still have generations of this thing that's been presented to me through family and media and what you're supposed to be like. And we're in the social media space. So I think by context, like our job is online. We are online content creators. So a big part of what we've been aware of is like when we project things, let's be real or more real so that it's not, not authentic. And I think that's been also an interesting component of this is that we are cookbook authors and we have this platform and so it's just this environment that adds a little complexity to everything because we're also trying to move forward with our work. And then there's the whole prioritization piece, like where do we prioritize? Is it the kids? Is it ourselves? Is it our relationship? What is that? And that's like a day-to-day thing.
Yeah, you explained all of that so well, and there were many light bulb moments for me. One of the things that you said, though, was about dads needing to essentially take a harder look at themselves and do that yucky work. Just the fact that you took the step to say, I need to figure myself out, that's a huge one step. And I'm picturing the whole thing, it's this long staircase. And so you clarified so well, it's not a one jump and you're done. It's gradual and slow. But I do think there is one step that is, okay, I guess if you tell me I should probably listen to this podcast, I'll listen to it. Okay, I guess I need to figure out where that deeper grief and or shame and guilt, where that's coming from. All those steps. So how, or should I say when, did you get to the point where you said about yourself, okay, like, I gotta figure myself out?
Yeah. I think the first memory I can think of, the first catalyst was probably when my wife and I sat down. So every year we sit down, and we do personal and professional goal setting, like, hey, let's talk about what went well, what didn't, and we write it down in a journal, and we have the journals going back, 10 plus years. And she called me out by saying, hey, here is a theme. And here's what we're struggling with as a family right now. And the theme is you're overcommitting and you're not spending time listening to what I'm telling you. I'm trying to do my work for myself. I'm reading books, I'm doing yoga, I'm taking the time for me to be in a place. And I don't see you doing that. I see you getting angry at me and the kids, and I see that coming out. And it required that conversation to be the first of several, where I had to stop being defensive and take ownership or accountability that I wasn't paying attention to what was important to her. What was important to her was, hey, Sean, as a parent in this relationship, can you please listen to this podcast or read this book? Or hell, don't just read the article or the Cliff's Notes. I don't care. Just read it because it's important to me and I need it to be important to you. And to be completely honest, I mean, I felt really annoyed. I was like, who are you to tell me? Like, I've got all these other things going on. I'm trying to work. I'm trying to transition to us working full time. We've got deadlines. We've got all these other environmental factors that in my mind was justifying why I could only give so much to this relationship and to being the best parent that I allegedly thought I was. And those conversations happened a few times. And I think eventually those conversations, which were from love and frustration and all the feelings, finally I was like, I am hearing this and I'm realizing, yeah, I need to pay attention to this. And if I don't, then I don't feel like I'm bringing that component to our relationship and to being a better dad. So that was a big part of it. And from there, I mean, we're talking years. So from there, there were small steps that I had to take personally to get to a place where I could feel like I could be calm when some type of blow up would happen, or that instead of reacting with what the hell or some other totally inappropriate response that just exacerbates the situation, I could just breathe. I mean, literally breathing, like just the act of breathing helps take what I was going to say. And I still do this, and tries to redirect it to getting back to a calmer state of energy. And so, you know, these were tactics that I had to build that helped with making that transition. So I think the big one was my wife really being open and honest with me and me being willing to listen, but it took many conversations. And the second part is probably gentle reminders from her on, am I doing my work? Whatever that means. It wasn't like I was given a list of here's the books to read. It was more like, what do you need to do to take care of the things you need to take care of so you're in a better mental place? And that shifted to me being more open to like, there's this whole mental health component. I wasn't taking care of myself. I was working all the time, prioritizing work and this idea of income and all this other stuff. And that was a parallel path that as a man and as the husband and growing up in the environment I grew up in, I had to stop thinking of myself and the success of myself as that being the definition of a father. And it continues to be something that I work on, but have become a little bit more okay with. And honestly, the other factor of that is I'm around all these other fathers. And so everybody doesn't, we as men don't talk about it with each other. It's not a conversation that we come up with when we're hanging out having a pint. It's not like, hey, tell me a little bit about how therapy was with your wife the other day. You know, like how was it? We don't talk about that. And so there's a part of me that has to like take a leap of faith a little bit and say, yeah, you know what? We go to therapy. We go to therapy with our kids. We go to therapy, ourselves. We go to therapy with each other. And that's been another part that's been really important because having a third party who can step in and be a little less biased in some of the conversations helps too. But you know, there's that too.
I could listen to you talk all day. You word things so well, you explain things so well, and it's very relatable. And I think about as you're talking, I'm just thinking about my own husband and the same journey, you know, getting to that place, especially. And here's the thing. I think if you are raising neurotypical kids, then you may never have to get to a place in your fatherhood or motherhood journey or marriage where you have to do this deep dive stuff. But with our kids, I mean, my oldest son, who's 9, used to have absolutely massive, aggressive meltdowns that were scary to watch. And, you know, your first gut instinct, especially the way we were raised, is like immediately time out. You don't speak to me that way. You don't, whatever. And none of that worked. And so for any parent, it is really hard to make that shift from eventually almost waving the white flag. It's clear that what I'm doing is not working and not effective, but I'm going to have to get vulnerable in order to create a home environment that works for everybody in it. And that is not easy, which is why I agree with you that it's a work in progress for everyone. I mean, there's no finished state. But the way that you are explaining it is just so well said. I'm sure those conversations that you had with your wife were very hard. I can picture having that kind of a conversation, and I don't know that it would go over that well. You got to
Yeah,
let
let me be
your
clear that
guard
the conversations weren't exactly toneless. I'll put it that way. And you bring up such a good point because I think when I look back and when my wife and I were just talking about this the other day about like when did this, when were what were some triggers to us that we in the first one was when we took our child to the doctor and the doctor he was projecting tics, verbal and nonverbal tics. And we were like, this is odd. It just all of a sudden happened. And we went to the doctor, and the doctor's response was, kids get tics. They'll work themselves out. And so I was like, okay, all right. Well, the doctor apparently went to school and knows what they're talking about. And my wife was like, I don't, these don't feel, you know, the mama instinct, like these don't, something's off. Like this doesn't feel right. And that was another one of our like aha moments. Instigated by my wife, who just trusted those instincts and continued to push and press and look at other options for therapy or therapeutic type environment. And we discovered a whole bunch of nutritional issues like dairy allergies, gluten allergies, even pork allergies. We did like, and so there's a part of it too where you think that you have this system of support in the medical community, and we didn't experience that. It was an uphill battle for us to find doctors, find therapists. I mean, we had to call 55 different therapists to find a slot to get in the key, just to start going to therapy. And so I think that that's another aspect of like the relational frustration too, as a dad. It's like in the beginning, I was just like, okay, well, he said it'll work itself out. That's kind of like what I was thinking. Let the kids play it out. Let them like duke it out. That's what we did when we grew up in the 80s. We just like, pushed each other on the ground and moved on and called it a day. And so I think that there's this other component that we find sometimes very difficult, well, oftentimes very difficult, and finding a provider community that also validates or is willing to listen to you as parents. And honestly, it was Mary in the beginning. She was the one going to the doctor. She was the one I might help facilitate setting up appointments, but her mama instinct and her ability to continue to go down the rabbit hole helped us, I think, leapfrog a little bit more to getting to a place where we had diagnoses and options that we didn't necessarily think of in the past. And again, I wasn't using words like neurodivergent, neurotypical. I just didn't, it wasn't in my vocabulary. And I think that those are things that definitely helped.
It wasn't, those words weren't in my vocabulary either. And I think that's the hard part, like you said earlier, that, there's no handbook here. We're all learning this as we go. But I thought it was interesting about the doctor piece. I struggle with this. I'm not gonna lie. I really struggle because I'm all aboard the doctors should know best train. And they often do. But they often don't. Sometimes, just as an example, our very own pediatrician has on multiple occasions been dead on, like so right, so helpful, and other times been completely off. And that's just in one person. So how on earth are we supposed to navigate? Like, I just find it so frustrating navigating this wilderness, unexplored territory of where to get help and the right kind of help and by whom and is it covered by insurance? And that's a whole other piece. Just really frustrating. And that can take a toll on the moods of parents, but make sure you show up for your kids and make sure you're nice and patient and calm and gentle when you just paid, a couple thousand dollars for an evaluation. There's so much to it. It's complicated and infuriating sometimes. I'm sure you guys find that
Yeah.
at points.
I can remember distinctly when our primary care physician was going through the initial process of the ADHD diagnosis, and they handed us a form. And I'm like, okay, so what do we do? Fill this out, we'll score it, and we'll let you know where in the ADHD spectrum your child is. A form. That was like the first conversation. And it did come with clinical observations and conversations. So I don't want to take away from the fact that that's an important part of how the process works. But when I read through it and there was the self-assessment as parents, and then you get the assessment from your teachers and other maybe peer groups that need to do the assessment, it was very eye-opening to me how quickly you jump from, or that we had to jump from like something's going on to he has ADHD. And in my mind, like it was so hard for me to go through that jump. Yet I distinctly remember I was bringing my son home in my car, and the doctor called minutes after we had left, after dropping off the form for the last time. And the doctor said, well, I think there's some early read of ADHD, and I'll let you know. And literally 15 minutes later, I'm in the car, Bluetooth, pick up the phone. Hey, doctor, how's it going? He said, yes, the son definitely has ADHD. We definitely have some anxiety things that we need to talk about. And we think the tics are exacerbated from anxiety. So we need to continue to go down these diagnosed paths. And my son was the first person to speak up, and he said, yes. And he said yes because he finally had an answer he could point to. Not that he was trying to deflect some of the behavior, but mind you, he's 11 at the time when this happened. And he just said yes. He was visibly happy because he had an answer, and it wasn't this thing in his head that's making him go crazy, his words. It was an environment where somebody has validated that there is something different. And so that was something that really struck me is there, the conversations just go all over the place. I feel like I'm in a tennis match at times. Like, could be this, could be you could be on the autism spectrum, or you know what, he could have some brain tumor. You know, it's like, oh my God, like tell me a little bit about how to control the sphere a little bit. It seems like we're all over the place. So, long story short, I think that the big thing is, you know, it really required us to stay the course, and my wife was the big part of that. She was the anchor to making sure that we were just continuing to push forward, very assertive with the doctors and stating our case when we were not comfortable with responses, because there were doctors who would say, oh, there's no such thing as gluten intolerance. You either have celiac or you don't. Well, you know what? When our kids eat a lot of gluten and sugar, our kids are nuts. So we have taken the measure of removing artificial dyes, gluten, and excessive dairy, and it makes a difference. Absolutely makes a difference for our children. It causes inflammation, and that inflammation shows up in the brain, and we absolutely see a difference when we, you know, just look after a birthday party when we're like, yeah, okay, have the cake. Then we have to deal with it at the end of the day. So those are the types of things that I think are another factor to your point. Like, how do we navigate that when we're supposed to trust the medical community? And I think that I have just found, at least as a dad, that the best thing I can do is be more vocal and be more open to this idea that the institutions are not necessarily in a position to understand your life. They're understanding, I have got 15 minutes with you. A diagnosis code and a therapy code means I can issue you a bill. And so I am going to do the things to take care of you, but there's these rules they have to follow. So that's something that we pay close attention to now, is to make sure that if we really do our own research and we feel comfortable with that research, we're going to present it to the doctors together as opposed to in the past. So we divide and conquer. So she's like, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you go look at this and understand this? And this happened when we had some conflict with the school. We had to divide and conquer to work with the school, and she had only so much emotional energy. So I'm like, you know what? I'll take care of this. I'll do the research. I'll read the laws, understand what is and isn't the in the scope and purview of what the school can and can't do. And so those are the things that really now are a huge difference maker among, like, you know, self-help and like going out on dates and the fun things too. But that's been a huge part, is dividing and conquering, is and just talking to each other, like, how are you? Are you good? You want me to get this? So yeah. Yeah, I
That
feel like I need a drink.
I know. it's a therapy session here. I totally
Yeah.
I feel that. But you touched on something that I don't think happens enough about the dividing and conquering. And I think a lot of dads are not sure that they're going to do it justice. They know in a lot of cases they'll say, "Well, my wife's been doing all the research and I want to be informed." But I don't know how to advocate. How do I advocate? It feels weird. It's awkward. It's uncomfortable. Because there's like the mama instinct thing, the mama bear mode, and that, which is uncomfortable too, to be honest. But at least it's societally accepted as mama bear mode. Where's dad bear mode, right? And so how do we change that narrative around, okay, you can do this. You can advocate for your kid. And it doesn't have to come across as aggressive or yelling and angry. And I don't, there's a happy medium to it. And I'm sure you've been finding that out as you kind of go through the advocating process.
Yeah, because honestly, the word advocating to me has meant yelling. It has meant stern emails. It has meant being called difficult parents. When in reality, we're being assertive. We're saying we're going to be direct and we're going to tell you what is uncomfortable for us. And we hope that you meet us in the middle with some kind of outcome. And I mean, honestly, like individually, we only have so much emotional health to give. And there are times where I've had to, you know, say, hey, can you get this? And there's others I get it. And there's even times we're on calls with various institutions, and Mary's kind of squeezing my knee under the table, which is kind of code for, can you step in? And I'm like, I'll step in. I got this. And yeah, I think to your point about the dad bear, I think, you know, I am not a doctor, so I can't necessarily tell you the neurological connection that kids have with the mother. And you know, our environment is obviously based on the fact that, you know, we birth the children, or Mary birthed the children, but I would say that my disconnect and probably my definition of what it meant to be a good father in the early parts of my kids' life probably led them to be more connected with my wife because she was there. She was there seeing their good and their bad. Bad's probably not the word to use, the good and the emotions. I was coming home at the end of the day and sometimes taking them to soccer, or we're going out together as a family, and then I step in as the parent when I'm angry or I'm yelling, and the consequence piece. You brought up the whole timeout piece. Like, timeout, what a big fail for us. So
That's
I'm not here to project.
100% huge
But
fail.
anytime, yeah, we just got a new gaming system for our kids, and the first thing I thought of is, oh boy, you're gonna have to take that away now for this behavior. Yeah, our kids are like, whatever, dad. It's like those don't work with our children, that the timeout type thing. But yet, that's where I started with. That's what I grew up with. The corner chair, or you're not gonna get this, or you're grounded. No context for me growing up, just I'm taking away and you get to be by yourself. And so that, again, progressing years ago to today, has been something I've had to remove from my toolbox. Even though when I get heated, like I've said just yesterday, I'm like, you're not going to get the Xbox tomorrow if you keep telling me you're not going to bed right now. It literally, it happens. Like, you're
Yeah.
just wired. And so, and then bless his heart, my son looks at me and he's like, he just starts laughing. He's like, all right, dad, in 2 minutes, I'm gonna go upstairs. So, outsiders might look at that like, oh, your kids are walking all over you. And our, that happens. To us, it's like, it's a win. It's a win because I'm not seeing someone blow up at me. Instead, it's self-regulation. They haven't reached that escalation point and they're taking care of themselves. Even though in my mind, I'm like, he didn't respect me as a father. He just told me he's not going to go to bed right now when I told him. And so that's been something I've had to let go of, that somehow my comments are the rule, and that if you break the rule, like, it's my own ego I've got to deal with. And that's been the whole experience, is I got to let go of my own ego, and I've got one. So it's that process too that's been important for me.
That was really good. That was really good. And because I'm thinking about it too, in our own home, it's constant. It feels like both of my sons have ADHD, and my husband has now come to realize that he does it as well. And something about, and I'm trying to understand ADHD in general, but it feels like my kids are never listening. And it feels disrespectful. And I don't know if, but I kind of am starting to think that they're not listening, but it's not really their fault. But then sometimes we'll have a moment and it's just like what you said. Hey, I don't know, whatever. You need to go upstairs, get ready for bed in 3 minutes. Give them the timer. Give them the visual timer. Do all the right things. Well, the timer goes off and they're not getting up. I told you, like, it's time. Come on, let's go. I'll be up. I'm just gonna finish my chapter of the book. My daughter's like a constant nose in a book. Like, whoa. You just told me when you're gonna go to bed? Ugh, that feels wrong. That's disrespectful, right? Like, that's talking back. We're not supposed to talk back. Working through why is that actually a win? That's awesome. What a great reframe. But I still carry the guilt though, and I still carry the nervousness that that exact exchange will happen in front of extended family or other people who absolutely do not understand that we are picking our battles. And that they said, I need to finish this chapter, but then I'm going to go upstairs. And they didn't ask for it. It's about the asking. Can I please stay up? So I hear you 100% on this struggle because it is societal, it's generational. And good for you for reframing it, because I could use some of that sometimes too.
Hashtag truth. I mean, can I just tell you, like, and I won't even use specific people. I'll just say, when people around you are entering your world or you're entering theirs for an extended period of time, it is eye-opening now to experience how many people love giving us feedback without ever asking the first question of, hey, how are things going? Tell me a little bit about, like, how things have been progressing. Instead, it's, unsolicited advice about how we should be doing things. And I think that I still get really annoyed when that happens. I get insecure. I feel like I failed as a parent. I feel like I just want to walk away. I feel like I don't want to hang out anymore. And I'm an extrovert. So when it comes to like wanting to be around people, like that's my jam. And so that's hard for me to sometimes experience. But we've had to be more vocal about advocating for our own kids among the people that are close to us and be open with them about and vulnerable. I think that's the scary part is we've, and especially for me, when I think about the men I hang out with in my community and in my life, you know, I think that there are some small signs that we're able to talk a little bit about mental health, emotional growth, things beyond just the football game and what are we doing this weekend and the guys trip type experiences and actually talk in earnest about like how are things going. And that's to me, like if they're not going to ask, I can appreciate that they're coming from a different place, but I am going to set some context and I'm going to be a little bit more assertive by saying what doesn't help is when you create an environment that doesn't have structure. And I'm not saying give me an Outlook calendar for my kids. I'm saying if you say you're going to the store, don't go to four. Because by the third one, by the second one, they're going to go nuts. Or if you tell them to go play without giving them some options, then they're going to come back in 4 minutes saying they're bored. So let's give them three different things to do. First, play laser tag. Next, here's some cornhole. And then finally, why don't you go play some basketball and then come back and we can talk about the next thing. And to maybe some other parents who aren't experiencing this because they have neurotypical children or other dads who haven't reached a point where they're okay with that. I think sometimes those conversations can be hard. And for me, I've just had to be more open to being okay with the judgment and being okay with that many of those conversations from outside in are coming from a place of love and care, except they the missing layer is they haven't asked first, like, tell me what's going on.
Yep. Again, just you really explain things very, very clearly and well, and almost give me I feel reassured that because this is something that both my husband and I still struggle with this. Taking the idea of doing chores around the house is another one. He and I growing up, it's just you do these chores, you just do them, and we didn't like to do it, but we did it. But it's not like that anymore. And I'm still struggling with, but should it be? And so I feel like you're giving permission to rewrite the rules. And I feel very reassured by the way you explain that. We can rewrite the rules if it contributes to the health of emotional, mental health of everyone in the home, including our children, because they get a say too, whereas we didn't get a say back when we were young. What a change
You are
of,
so right.
yeah. That must have, but you did that. You did that work.
It's a team effort, let me tell you. Because honestly, what I still struggle with as a guy and as a dad is the environmental pressures. Like if I think about this conversation we're having, this has taken years to get to a place. And these are awkward conversations as a couple, right, with my wife. These are tense conversations where I've been told, listen to this, or I don't feel like you really understand or respect what I'm going through. And I've had to accept that, you know, again, ego, right? Like I had to accept that because I love my wife and we have our ups and downs and all the things. But like in the end, like our bond and the things we do are what makes us stronger. And that's the hard part. And for me, I think that I went it alone for so long. I just thought I had to have the answers all the time. I just felt like, well, and every time I didn't have an answer, I felt like a failure because the dad, this is my narrative. Again, I'm not projecting, but the dad has to have the answers. The dad has to be the caregiver. You know, the awkward conversation around that, like just think about the irony. I'm not around the kids every day. My wife was. And not yet, in my mind, I'm thinking like I'm the provider because society told me and my family structure told me, get a good job, make money, take care of your kids. There was no like rule book about how to take care of the kids, let alone the neurodivergent aspect. And that took a long time for me to be okay with. Took a long time for me to read books and to do work, to do more time for myself so I can to reflect on the emotions and journal, which I'm still terrible at. And so I think that for moms who might be listening to this right now, I say it takes time. And I know it's not always easy to hear that, but for the relationships where you just have that experience and that love, and my hope is that you understand that as dads, we sometimes take it alone. Even though we have our spouse or our partners or our smaller community of people that are around us, we don't ask for help. I didn't ask for help. I had to be told, like, do this, like, show up, read some books. Like, it's one thing to read a business book, but why aren't you reading any books about life as a parent of neurodivergent kids? And I remember the first book that really hit me, was a book that Oprah co-wrote with it's Bruce Perry, Carrie Bruce Perry. It's What Happened to You? And it's this entire book that changes the narrative of don't say what's wrong with you. What happened to you is the question you should be asking. And it isn't necessarily a book about neurodivergence. It's just more about like changing the way you approach things. And it was one of those books that my wife recommended and she was reading. And when I started reading it, I was like, wow, it was powerful. There were a lot of chapters. They're going back and forth about his experience as a doctor and a clinician and going through these different experiences with children and adults. And so it was one of those things where it was a catalyst for me. And so I hope that there's the ability to have those conversations and press the dads out there that we've got to know that we're not alone and we need to be more vulnerable. It's hard, especially in public. And we just have to, I hope over time what that does is it builds more resilience for our children so that they see more emotions from us as parents that we share as a dad that I made the mistake. Like, my God, for me to say that is like I need to run to the other room and hide for a few minutes. So, yeah, there's so much I could say there, but I think that that's really been important for me. My wife calling me in and being patient enough with me to stick with me and say, I know you're in there, Sean. There's this emotional guy that I fell in love with. Can you come out for a second so we can have this conversation? And I need that to come out more often. And that's what's taken years for me to get to. So.
So good. So good. Oh, I really just you hit the nail on the head on so many things, so many conversations that I've had with moms. I feel like you really this will be a very popular episode. Let's just say that because you're touching on a lot of pieces of the puzzle that I think affect many, many dads and part of the narrative of the mom's stories as well, including my own. And so you're pretty awesome, I have to say. This has been really nice.
Well, thank you. You're pretty awesome because
Thank
you're
you.
doing the work. You're out there and you're that connection. I believe in this idea of contextual intelligence where people bring people together. And I just want to emphasize how important that is because I have this opportunity to share this. And my God, it's let me just be very clear too. It's a journey. Like, it ain't perfect. Every day, every hour, I'm working on it. And so I just want to make sure that I disclaim that a little bit, that it's going to probably be there forever.
Yeah, I was gonna say, oh, you didn't just come to these conclusions overnight and you're just preaching. No, not at all. That's very apparent. And again, it's so cool to have this conversation be sort of, I don't know, written into the internet for all of eternity, for people to fall back on to say, that guy, he gets me. He gets me. That's where I'm at. That's where he was a few years ago. That's where I'm at right now. These are the steps that he took. And yes, it is a journey. And yes, it is a slow go. But you named so many pieces in the puzzle that along the way helped you to where you are now, which is a stellar human. And so is your wife, of course. And so together, the two of you make an awesome pair in this parenting journey. And I just can't thank you enough for being brave and being vulnerable and sharing all of these, what's on your mind and heart. And I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to talk with me personally, where we can chat and just get to know each other like old friends, I would love to do a discovery call with you. Go to my website, onthehardays.com, and click on Schedule a Call. And if you're not already subscribed to this podcast, please do so so that you get the latest when they roll out. Not to mention, please leave a review if you feel like this episode spoke to you. That way, the podcast will be shown to more mothers. And finally, you can find me on Instagram at On The Hard Days with dots in between each word, or in my free Facebook community, On The Hard Days Podcast and Community. If you are feeling isolated in your parenting journey, I encourage you to reach out through any of these means so that I can connect you with your people and support you in whatever way you need.